Hello and welcome to the latest Revisiting Old Favourites podcast, where we continue our pilgrimage. It's been a long, wending pilgrimage from the north of France, over the Alps and Switzerland, now down into Italy, in the company of our pilgrim, on the path to Rome, Hilaire Belloc. And today we see him recounting a dream, also some Latin poetry, Pope's picture, wagon boats, an oracle, which is in the Latin. So, without any further ado, let's continue with our penurious pilgrim. Remember, he's virtually out of money. So, for a little while, I slept dreamlessly. Just so much of my living self remained as can know, without understanding, the air around. It is the life of trees. That underpart, the barely conscious base of nature, which trees and sleeping men are sunk in, is not only dominated by an immeasurable calm, but is also beyond all expression contented. And in its very stuff, there is a complete and changeless joy. This is surely what the great mind meant when it said to the Athenian judges that death must not be dreaded, since no experience in life was so pleasurable as a deep sleep. For being wise and seeing the intercommunion of things, he could not mean extinction, which is nonsense, but a lapse into that underpart of which I speak, for there are gods also below the earth. But a dream came into my sleep and disturbed me, increasing life and therefore bringing pain. I dreamt that I was arguing, at first easily, then violently, with another man. More and more he pressed me, and at last in my dream there were clearly spoken words. And he said to me, "You must be wrong, because you are so cold. If you were right, you would not be so cold." And this argument seemed quite reasonable to me in my foolish dream, and I muttered to him, "You are right, I must be in the wrong. It is very cold." Then I half opened my eyes and saw the telegraph pole, the trees, and the lake. Far up the lake, where the Italian frontier cuts it, the torpedo boats looking for smugglers were casting their searchlights. One of the roving beams fell full on me, and I became broad awake. I stood up. It was indeed cold, the kind of clinging and grasping chill that was not to be expressed in degrees of heat, but in dampness perhaps, or perhaps in some subtler influence of the air. I sat on the bank and gazed at the lake in some despair. Certainly I could not sleep again without a covering cloth, and it was now past midnight, nor did I know of any house, whether if I took the road I should find one in a mile, or in two, or in five. And, note you, I was utterly exhausted. That enormous march from Faedo, though it had been wisely broken by the siesta at Bellinzona, needed more than a few cold hours under trees, and I thought of the 3 poor francs in my pocket and the 38 miles remaining to Milan. The stars were beyond the middle of their slow turning, and I watched them, splendid and in order, for sympathy, as I also regularly but slowly and painfully dragged myself along my appointed road. But in a very short time, a great, tall, square, white house stood right on the roadway, and to my intense joy, I saw a light in one of its high air windows. Standing therefore beneath, I cried at the top of my voice, "Hola!" 5 or 6 times. A woman put her head out of the window into the fresh night and said, "You cannot sleep here, we have no rooms." Then she remained looking out of her window, ready to analyse the difficulties of the moment. A good-natured woman and fat. In a moment, another window at the same level, but farther from me, opened, and a man leaned out, just as those alternate figures come in and out of the toys that tell the weather. "It is impossible," said the man. "We have no rooms." Then they talked a great deal together, while I shouted, "Quid vis non è possibile dormire in la foresta? È troppo freddo. Vis ne me assassinare veni da Lugano. E più non è possibile ritornare," and so forth. They answered in strophe and antistrophe, sometimes together in full chorus, and again in semi-chorus, and with variations, that it was impossible. Then a light showed in the chinks of their great door. The lock grated, and it opened. A third person, a tall youth, stood in the hall. I went forward into the breach and occupied the hall. He blinked at me above a candle and murmured, as a man apologising, "It is not possible." Whatever I have in common with these southerners made me understand that I had won, so I smiled at him and nodded. He also smiled and at once beckoned to me. He led me upstairs and showed me a charming bed in a clean room where there was a portrait of the Pope looking cunning. The charge for that delightful and human place was sixpence, and as I said good night to the youth, the man and woman from above said good night also. And this was my first introduction to the most permanent feature in the Italian character, the good people. When I woke and rose, I was the first to be up and out. It was high morning. The sun was not yet quite over the eastern mountains. But I had slept, though so shortly, yet at great ease, and the world seemed new and full of a merry mind. The sky was coloured like that high metalwork which you may see in the studios of Paris. There was gold in it, fading into bronze, and above, the bronze softened to silver. A little morning breeze, courageous and steady, blew down the lake and provoked the water to glad ripples, and there was nothing that did not move and take pleasure in the day. The Lake of Lugano is of a complicated shape and has many arms. It is at this point very narrow indeed, and shallow too. A mole, pierced at either end with low arches, has here been thrown across it, and by this mole the railway and the road pass over to the eastern shore. I turned in this long causeway and noticed the northern view. On the farther shore was an old village, and some pleasure houses of rich men on the shore. The boats also were beginning to go about the water. These boats were strange, unlike other boats. They were covered with hoods and looked like floating wagons. This was to shield the rowers from the sun. Far off, a man was sailing with a little brown sprit sail. It was morning, and all the world was alive. Coffee in the village left me 2 francs and 2 pennies. I still thought the thing could be done, so invigorating and deceiving are the early hours, and coming farther down the road to an old and beautiful courtyard on the left, I drew it, and hearing a bell at hand, I saw a tumble-down church with trees before it, and went into mass. And though it was a little low village mass, yet the priest and 3 acolytes to serve it, and true and gracious mark of a Catholic country, these boys were restless and distracted at their office. You may think it trivial, but it was certainly a portent. One of the acolytes had half his head clean shaved. Most extraordinary sight. I could not take my eyes from it, and I had heartily wished I had an omen book with me to tell me what it might mean. When there were oracles on earth before Pan died, that this sight would have been of the utmost use, for I should have consulted the oracle woman for a lira, a biasca, for instance, or in the lonely woods of the Cinder Mountain. And after a lot of incense and hesitation and wrestling with the god, the oracle would have accepted Apollo, and, staring like one entranced, she would have chanted verses which, though ambiguous, would at least have been a guide. Thus, matutinus adest ubi vesper et accipiens te, saepe recusatam voces intelligit hospes, rusticus ignotus notas flumina telus occupat in sancto tum, tum stans edo caveto, tonsurum hirsute capitis, via namque pedestrem feria preveniens cursum peregrine laborum, pro pietate tua inceptum frustratur amore, antique ritus alto sub numine Romae. Lector, what hoggish great participles, Auctor. Well, you see, it was but a rustic oracle at nine and three farthings. The revelation, and even that is supposing silver at par. Let us translate it for the vulgar. When early morning seems but eve, and they that still refuse receive, when speech unknown men understand, and floods are crossed upon dry land, within the sacred walls beware the shaven head that boasts of hair, for when the road attains the rail, the pilgrim's great attempt shall fail. Of course, such an oracle might very easily have made me fear too much. The shaven head I should have taken for a priest, especially if it was to be met with in a temple. It might have prevented me entering a church, which would have been deplorable. Then I might have taken it to mean that I should never have reached Rome, which would have been a monstrous weight upon my mind. Still, as things unfolded themselves, the oracle would have become plainer and plainer, and I felt the lack of it greatly, for, I repeat, I had certainly received an omen. Okay, and on that note, that portentous, ominous note, we'll leave our pilgrim for this week, and we'll return to continue with him on the path to Rome next week. And until then, thanks as always for joining me in the Revisiting Old Favourites podcast. Please do join me next week. Between now and then, do have a wonderful week and many Lenten blessings to you and yours.